Your father's been murdered.
My father? What?
His Majesty, the King. We found him in the Royal Chapel, stabbed in the back. Two intruders are in custody. The dwarf Magnus confirmed it. He saw them murder your father, but he was powerless to stop them.
Ulrich heard Wieland's voice, but he couldn't understand the words. They didn't make sense. My father is dead?
He had just spoken with him before he had gone to Tilly's room, not more than a few hours ago.
How could he be dead?
I must insist that you remain here, Your Highness, under heavy guard until I finish sweeping the castle. They may not be alone. I'm presently conducting a...
Insist what you like, Wieland, but get out of my way. I want to see my father,
Ulrich demanded, pushing past him. King Amrath's body has been taken to his bedroom, Your Highness.
His body?
Ulrich didn't want to hear any more. He ran up the steps, his slippers flying off his feet.
Stay with the prince, Wieland shouted after him.
Ulrich reached the royal wing. In the corridor, there was a crowd which moved aside at his approach. As he reached the chapel, its door lay open with several of the chief ministers gathered inside.
My prince,
he heard his uncle Percy call, but he didn't stop. He was determined to reach his father.
He couldn't be dead.
He rounded the corner, passed his own room, and rushed into the royal suite. Here the double doors were open as well. Several ladies in nightgowns and robes stood just outside, weeping loudly. Inside, a pair of older women busied themselves, wringing out pink-stained linens in a washbasin. To the side of the bed stood his sister, Arista, dressed in a burgundy and gold gown. Her arms wrapped around the bedpost, which she gripped so tightly that her fingers were white. She stared at the figure on the mattress with eyes that were dry but wide with horror. On the pale white sheets of the royal bed lay King Amrath Essendon. He still wore the same clothes Ulrich had seen him in before he had retired for the night. His face was pale and his eyes were closed. Near the corner of his lips there was a tiny tear of dried blood.
My prince! I mean, Your Royal Majesty,
his uncle corrected himself as he followed Ulrich into the bedchamber. His uncle Percy had always looked older than his father had. His hair was very grey, his face wrinkled and drooping. However, he possessed the trim, elegant build of a swordsman. He was still in the process of tying up his robe as he entered.
Thank Maribor you're safe. We thought you might have met a similar fate.
Ulrich was at a loss for words. He just stood staring at the still body of his father.
Your Majesty, do not worry. I'll take care of everything. I know how hard this must be. You're still a young man and...
What are you talking about?
Ulrich looked at him.
Take care of what?
What are you taking care of?
A number of things, Your Majesty. There is the securing of the castle, the investigation as to how this happened, the apprehension of those responsible, arrangements for the funeral, and, of course, the eventual coronation.
Coronation?
You are king now, sire. We will need to arrange your crowning ceremony, but that, of course, can wait until we have everything else settled.
But I thought...
Wieland told me the murderers have been captured.
He captured two of them. I'm just making certain there aren't any more.
What will happen to them?
He looked back at the still form of his father.
The killers. What will happen to them?
That is up to you, Your Royal Majesty. Their fate is yours to decide, unless you would prefer I handle the matter for you, since it can be quite unpleasant.
Ulrich turned to his uncle.
I want them to die, Uncle Percy. I want them to suffer horribly, and then die.
Of course, Your Majesty. Of course. I assure you, they will. The dungeons of Essendon Castle lay buried 2 stories beneath the earth. Groundwater seeped through cracks in the walls and wet the face of the stone. Fungus grew in the mortar between stone blocks, and mould coated the wood of the doors, stools, and buckets. The foul, musty smell mixed with the stench of decay, and the corridors echoed with the mournful cries of doomed men. Despite the rumours told in Medford's taverns, the castle dungeons had a limited capacity. Needless to say, the prison staff found room for the king killers. They moved prisoners to provide Royce and Hadrian with their own private cell. News of the king's death didn't take long to spread, and for the first time in years, the prisoners had something exciting to talk about.
"Who would have thought I'd outlast old Amrath?" a gravelly voice muttered.
He laughed, but the laughter quickly broke into a series of coughs and sputters.
"Any chance the prince might review our sentences on account of all this?"
a weaker, younger voice asked.
"I mean, it's possible, isn't it?"
The question was met with a lengthy silence, more coughing, and a sneeze.
"The guard said they stabbed the bastard in the back right in his own chapel. What does that say about his piety?"
a new, bitter voice questioned.
"Seems to me he was asking for a bit too much from the man upstairs." "The ones that done it are in our old cell. They moved me and Danny out to make room. I saw them when they shifted us. 2 of them, one big, the other little." "Anyone know them? Maybe they was trying to break some of us out and got sidetracked, eh?" "Gotta have some pretty big brass ones to kill a king in his own castle. They won't get a trial, not even one for show. I'm surprised they've lived this long."
"Gonna get a public torture before the execution. Things been quiet a long time. Haven't had a good torture in years."
"So, why do you think they did it?"
"Why don't you ask 'em?"
"Hey, over there! You conscious in that cell of yours? Or did they beat you stupid?"
"Maybe they're dead."
They were not dead, but neither were they talking. Royce and Hadrian stood chained to the far wall of their cell, their ankles locked in stocks and their mouths gagged with leather muzzles. They had been there only for the better part of an hour, but already the strain on Hadrian's muscles was painful. The soldiers had removed their gear, cloaks, boots and tunics, leaving them with nothing but their breeches to fight the damp chill of the dungeon. They hung listening to the rambling conversations of the other inmates. The conversation halted at heavy approaching footfalls. The door to the cell block opened and banged against the interior wall.
"Right this way, Your Royal Highness, I mean, Your Royal Majesty," the voice of the dungeon warden said rapidly.
A metal key twisted in the lock and the door to their cell creaked open. 4 royal bodyguards led the prince and his uncle, Percy Braga, inside. Hadrian recognized Braga, the Archduke and Lord Chancellor of Melengar, but he had never seen Ulrich before. The prince was young, perhaps no more than 20. He was short, thin and delicate in appearance, with light brown hair that reached to his shoulders and only the ghost of a beard. His stature and features must have come from his mother, because the former king had been a bear of a man. He wore only a silk nightshirt with a massive sword strapped comically to his side by an oversized leather belt.
"These are the ones?"
"Yes, Your Majesty," Braga replied.
"Torch," Ulrich commanded, snapping his fingers impatiently as a soldier pulled one from the wall bracket and held it out for him. Ulrich scowled at the offer.
"Hold it near their heads. I wish to see their faces."
Ulrich peered at them.
"No marks? They haven't been whipped?"
"No, Your Majesty," Braga said. "They surrendered without a fight, and Captain Wyland thought it best to lock them up while he searched the rest of the castle. I approved his decision. We can't be certain these 2 acted alone in this."
"No, of course not. Who gave the order to gag them?"
I don't know, Your Majesty, Braga replied. Do you wish their gags removed?
No, Uncle Percy.
Oh, I can't call you that anymore, can I?
You're the king now, Your Majesty. You can call me whatever you wish.
But it isn't dignified, not for a ruler, but Archduke is too formal. I'll call you Percy. Is that all right?
It's not my place to approve your decisions any longer, sire.
Percy it is, then. And no, leave their gags on. I've no desire to hear their lies. What will they say except that they didn't do it? Captured killers always deny their crimes. What choice do they have? Unless they wish to take their last few moments of life to spit in the face of their king, I won't give them the satisfaction of that.
They could tell us if they were working alone, or for someone else. They could even tell us who that person or persons might be.
Ulrich continued to study them, his eyes focused on a twisted mark in the shape of an M on Royce's left shoulder. He squinted and then, out of frustration, snatched the torch from a guard and held it so close to Royce's face that he winced.
What is this here? Like a tattoo, but not quite.
A brand, Your Majesty, Braga replied. It's the mark of Manzant. It would seem this creature was once an inmate of Manzant prison.
Ulrich looked puzzled.
I didn't think inmates were released from Manzant, and I wasn't aware anyone has ever escaped.
Braga appeared puzzled as well.
Ulrich then moved to inspect Hadrian. When he observed the small silver medallion that hung around Hadrian's neck, the prince lifted it, turned it over with mild curiosity, and then let it go with disdain.
It doesn't matter, Ulrich said. I really don't think they look like the type to volunteer information. In the morning, have them hauled out to the square and tortured. If they say anything of merit, have them beheaded. If not? If not, quarter them slowly. Draw their bowels into the sun, and have the royal surgeon keep them alive as long as possible. Oh, and before you do, make certain heralds have time to make several announcements. I want a crowd for this. People need to know the penalty for treason.
As you wish, sire.
Ulrich started for the door and then stopped. He turned and struck Royce across the face with the back of his hand.
He was my father, you worthless piece of filth!
The prince walked out, leaving the two hanging helplessly, awaiting the dawn. Hadrian could only guess how long they had been hanging against the wall. Perhaps 2 or 3 hours had passed. The faceless voices of the other inmates grew less frequent until they stopped entirely, silenced with boredom or sleep. The muzzle covering Hadrian's mouth became soaked with spit, and he found it difficult to breathe. His wrists were sore where the shackles rubbed, and his back and his legs ached. To make matters worse, the cold tightened his muscles, making the strain even more painful. Not wanting to look at Royce, he alternated between closing his eyes and staring at the far wall. He did his best to avoid thinking about what would happen when daylight came. Instead, his mind was full of thoughts of self-incrimination. This was his fault. His insistence on breaking rules landed them where they were. Their death was on his hands. The door opened, and once more a royal guard, this time accompanied by a woman, entered the cell. She was tall, slender, and dressed in a gown of burgundy and gold silk, which shimmered like fire in the torchlight. She was pretty, with auburn hair and fair skin. "Remove their gags," she ordered briskly. The jailers rushed to unbuckle the straps and pull off the muzzles. "Now leave us, all of you." The jailers promptly exited. "You too, Hilfred."
"Your Highness, I'm your bodyguard. I need to stay to—"
"They are chained to the wall, Hilfred," she snapped.
and then took a breath to calm herself. "I'm fine. Now please leave and guard the door. I want no interruptions by anyone. Do you understand?"
"As you wish, Your Highness."
The guard bowed and stepped out, closing the door behind him. She moved forward, carefully studying the two of them. On her belt was a jeweled Kriss dagger. Hadrian recognized the long, wavy blade as the type used by Eastern occultists for magical enchantments. Presently, he was more concerned with its other use, as a deadly weapon. She toyed with the dragon-shaped hilt, as if she might draw it forth and stab them at any moment.
"Do you know who I am?" she asked Hadrian.
"Princess Arista Essendon," Hadrian replied.
"Very good." She smiled at him. "Now, who are you? And don't bother lying. You'll be dead in less than 4 hours, so what's the point?"
"Hadrian Blackwater."
"And you?"
"Royce Melbourne."
"Who sent you here?"
"A man by the name of DeWitt," Hadrian replied. "He's a member of Duke de Lorcan's group from Dagestan, but we weren't sent to kill your father."
"What were you sent to do?"
Her painted nails clicked along the silver handle of the dagger, her eyes intent on them.
"To steal Count Pickering's sword. DeWitt said the Count challenged him to a duel here, last night, at a dinner party."
"And what were you doing in the chapel?"
"That's where DeWitt said he hid the sword."
"I see."
She paused a moment as her mask of stone wavered. Her lips began to tremble, and tears welled in her eyes. She turned away from them, trying to compose herself. Her head was bowed, and Hadrian could see her small body lurching.
"Listen," Hadrian said. "For what it's worth, we didn't kill your father."
"I know," she said, still facing away from them.
Royce and Hadrian exchanged glances. "You are sent here tonight to take the blame for the murder. Both of you are innocent."
"Are you—" Hadrian began, but stopped.
For the first time since their capture, he felt hopeful but thought better of it. He turned to Royce.
"Is she being sarcastic? You can usually tell better than I."
"Not this time," Royce said, his face tense.
"I just can't believe he's really gone," Arista muttered. "I kissed him goodnight. It was only a few hours ago."
She took a deep breath and straightened before turning to face them. "My brother has set plans for the two of you. You'll be tortured to death this morning. They're building a platform where you'll be drawn and quartered."
"We've already heard the details from your brother," Royce said dismally.
"He is the king now. I can't stop him. He is determined to see you punished."
"You could talk to him," Hadrian offered hopefully. "You could explain that we're innocent. You could tell him about DeWitt."
Arista wiped her eyes with the insides of her wrists.
"There is no DeWitt. There was no dinner party here last night. No Duke from Calais. And Count Pickering hasn't visited this castle in months. Even if any of that were true, Ulrich wouldn't believe me. Not a person in this castle will believe me. I'm just an emotional girl. They'll say, 'She's distraught. She's upset.' I can do no more to stop your execution today than I could do to save my own father's life last night."
"You knew he was going to die?" Royce asked. She nodded, fighting the tears again.
"I knew. I was told he would be killed, but I didn't believe it."
She paused for a moment to study their faces.
"Tell me, what would you do to get out of this castle alive before morning?"
The two glanced at each other in stunned silence.
"I'm thinking anything," Hadrian said. "How about you, Royce?"
His partner nodded. "I'd have to say I'm good with that."
"I can't stop the execution," Arista explained, "but I can see to it that you get out of this dungeon. I can return your clothes and weapons, and I can tell you a way to reach the sewers that run under this castle. I think they will take you out of the city. You should know that I have never personally explored them."
I wouldn't think so,"
Hadrian said, not really certain he was hearing everything correctly.
"It's imperative that when you escape, you leave the city."
"I don't think that will be a problem," Hadrian explained. "We'd probably do that anyway.
And one more thing. You must kidnap my brother."
There was a pause as they both stared at her.
Wait, hold on. You want us to kidnap the Prince of Melengar?"
"Technically, he's the King of Melengar now," Royce said, correcting him.
"Oh yeah, I forgot," Hadrian muttered.
Arista walked back to the cell door, peeking out the window, and then returned. "Why do you want us to kidnap your brother?" Royce asked.
"Because whoever killed my father will kill Ulric next, and before his coronation, I imagine."
"Why?"
"To destroy the Essendon line."
Royce stared at her. "Wouldn't that place you at risk as well?"
"Yes, but the threat to me will not be serious as long as Ulric is thought to be alive. He is the Crown Prince. I'm only the silly daughter. Besides, one of us has to stay here in order to run the kingdom and find my father's murderer."
"And your brother couldn't do that?" Hadrian asked.
"My brother is convinced you killed him."
"Oh, right. You have to forgive me. A minute ago, I was about to be executed, and now I'm going to kidnap a king. Things are changing a bit fast for me."
"What are we supposed to do with your brother once we've gotten him out of the city?" Royce asked.
"I need you to take him to Gutara Prison."
"I've never heard of the place," Royce said.
He looked at Hadrian, who shook his head.
"I'm not surprised. Few people have," Arista explained. "It's a secret ecclesiastical prison, maintained exclusively by the Church of Nephron. It lies on the north side of Windermere Lake. You know where that is." They both nodded.
"Travel around the edge of the lake. There is an old road that rises between some hills. Just follow it. I need you to take my brother to see a prisoner named Ezra Harden."
"And then what?"
"That's it," she said.
"Hopefully, he will be able to explain everything to Ulric well enough to convince him of what is going on."
"So," Royce said, "you want us to escape from this prison, kidnap the king, cross the countryside with him in tow while dodging soldiers who I assume might not accept our side of the story, and go to another secret prison so that he can visit an inmate."
Arista did not appear amused.
"Either that, or you can be tortured to death in 4 hours."
"Sounds like a really good plan to me," Hadrian declared. "Royce?"
"I like any plan where I don't die a horrible death."
"Good. I'll have 2 monks come in to give you last rites. I'll have your chains removed and the stocks open so you can kneel. You'll take their frocks, lock them in your place, and silence them with the gags. Your things are right outside in the prison office. I'll tell the warden that you're taking them for the poor. I'll have my personal bodyguard, Hilfred, escort you to the lower kitchens. They won't be active for another hour or so. You should have the place to yourselves. A grate near the basin lifts out for sweeping debris into the sewer. I'll speak to my brother and convince him to meet me at the kitchens alone. I assume you are capable fighters."
"He is." Royce bobbed his head toward Hadrian.
"My brother isn't, so you should be able to subdue him easily. Be certain not to hurt him."
"This is likely a really stupid question for me to ask," Royce said, "but what makes you think we won't just kill your brother?"
leave his body in the sewer to rot, and then just disappear.
"Nothing," she replied. "Like you, I simply don't have a choice."
The monks posed little problem, and once dressed in their frocks with hoods carefully drawn, Hadrian and Royce slipped out of their cell. Hilfred stood waiting just outside and quickly escorted them as far as the entrance to the kitchens, where, without a word, he left them alone. Royce, who had always had better night vision, led the way through the dark labyrinth of massive pots and piled plates. Dressed as they were with loose sleeves and long, disabling robes, they navigated this sea of potential disaster where one wrong move could topple a ceramic stack and cause alarm. So far, Arista's plan was a success. The kitchen was empty. They shed their clerical garb in favor of their own clothes and gear. They located the central basin, under which was a massive iron grating. Although it was heavy, they were able to move it out of position without making too much noise. They were pleasantly surprised to find some iron rungs leading into the void. In the depths below, they could hear the trickle of water. Hadrian found a pantry filled with vegetables and felt around until he located a burlap sack filled with potatoes. He quietly dumped out the spuds, shook the sack as clean as he could, and then rooted around for twine. They were still a long way from free, but the future was looking considerably better than it had only minutes before. Although Royce had not said a word, the fact that Hadrian was responsible bothered him. As he and Royce waited there together, the guilt and silence became overpowering.
"Aren't you going to say, 'I told you so'?"
Hadrian whispered. "What would be the point in that?"
"Oh, so you're saying that you're going to hang on to this and throw it at me at some future, more personally beneficial moment?"
"I don't see the point in wasting it now. Do you?"
They left the door to the kitchen slightly ajar, and before long, the distant glow of a torch appeared, and Hadrian could hear approaching voices.
At this signal, they took their positions. Royce took a seat at the table with his back to the entryway. He put the hood of his cloak up and pretended to hunch over a plate of food. Hadrian stood to one side of the door, holding his short sword by the blade.
"For Maribor's sake, why here?"
"Because I'm offering the old man a plate of food and a place to wash."
Hadrian recognized the voices of Alaric and Arista and surmised that they were now just outside the kitchen door.
"I don't see why we had to leave the guards, Arista. We don't know we... But there might be other assassins."
"That's why you need to talk to him. He says he knows who hired the killers, but he refuses to talk to a woman. He said he will only deal with you, and only if you are alone. Listen, I'm not sure who to trust at this point, and you don't know either. We can't be sure who's responsible, and some of the guards could be involved."
"Don't worry. He's an old man, and you're a skilled swordsman. You have to find out what he has to say. Don't you want to know?" "Of course. But what makes you think he has any clue?"
"I don't know anything for certain. But he's not asking for money. Just a fresh start. That reminds me. Here are some clothes to give him."
There was a brief pause.
"Look, he seems trustworthy to me. I think if he was lying, he would request gold or land."
"It's just so strange. Hilfred's not even with you. It's as if you're walking around without a shadow. It's unnerving, is what it is. Just coming down here with you, it's, well, you and I, we, you know, we're brother and sister, yet we hardly see each other. In the last few years, I think, I've only spoken to you a dozen times, and then only when we visit Drondel Fields on holiday. You always lock yourself up in that tower, doing who knows what, but now..."
"I know it's strange," Arista replied. "I agree. It's like the Night of the Fire all over again. I still have nightmares about that evening. I wonder if I'll have nightmares about tonight."
Ulrich's voice softened.
That's not really my point. It's just that we've never gotten along. Not really. But now, well, you're the only family I have left. It seems strange to be saying it, but I suddenly find that matters to me.
Are you saying you want to be friends?
Let's just say I want to stop being enemies.
I didn't know we were.
You've been jealous of me since Mother told you elder daughters don't get to be queen as long as little brothers are around to be king.
I have not.
I don't want to fight. Maybe I do want to be friends. I'm the king now, and I'll need your help. You're smarter than most of the ministers anyway. Father always said so. And you've had university training. That's more than I've had.
Trust me, Ulrich. I'm more than your friend. I'm your big sister, and I'll look out for you. Now go in there and see what this man has to say.
As Ulrich entered the kitchen, Hadrian brought the hilt of his sword down on the back of his head. The prince collapsed to the floor with a dull thud. Arista rushed in.
I said not to hurt him, she scolded. He would be screaming for the guard right now, otherwise, Hadrian explained.
He tied a gag around the prince's mouth and placed the sack over his head. Royce was already up from his seat and securing Ulrich's ankles with twine.
He's all right, though.
He'll live, Hadrian told her, as he secured the hands and arms of the unconscious prince.
Which is a whole lot more than he had in store for us,
Royce added, pulling tight the noose around the prince's ankles.
Keep in mind, he was certain you killed his father, the princess said. How would you react?
I never knew my father, Royce replied indifferently.
Your mother, then?
Royce is an orphan, Hadrian explained, as they continued to wrap the prince in twine. He never knew either of his parents.
I suppose that explains a lot.
Well, then, imagine how you'll treat the person who sent you to the chapel tonight once you find him. I doubt you'll be very charitable when coming face to face with him. In any case, you gave your word. Please do as I ask, and take good care of my brother. Don't forget I spared your lives tonight. I'm hoping that fact will keep you to your word.
She held out the bundle dropped by her brother. Here is a set of clothes that should fit him. They used to belong to the Stuart's son, and I always thought he looked about the same size as Ulrich. Oh, and remove his ring, but keep it safe. It bears the royal seal of Melengar and is proof of his identity. Without it, unless you encounter someone who knows his face, Ulrich is just another peasant. Return it to him when you reach the prison. He'll need it to get in.
We'll hold up our end of the bargain, Hadrian told her as he and Royce moved the bundled body of the prince toward the open basin.
Royce pulled the opulent dark blue ring from Ulrich's finger and stuffed it in his breast pocket. He then climbed to the bottom of the cistern. Using the rope tied around Ulrich's ankles, Hadrian lowered him headfirst to Royce. Once the prince was down, Hadrian grabbed the torch and dropped it to Royce. Then he entered the hole and dragged the grating back into position. At the bottom of the ladder was a 5-foot-wide, 4-foot-high arched tunnel in which a shallow river of filth flowed.
Remember, the princess whispered through the metal grid, go to Gutara prison and speak to Ezra Harden. And please, keep my brother safe.
An incomprehensible series of mumbles emitted from the prince under the potato sack. While they weren't certain exactly what he was saying, Royce and Hadrian could tell the prince was doing his best to shout and was decidedly displeased with his situation. The cold water backing up from the Gaelwar River into the sewer had woken him. They were waist-deep in it now, and while the smell was better, the temperature was not. As they looked out through the end of the cistern, the first pale light of dawn revealed the difference between the forested horizon and the sky. Night was melting away fast, and they could hear the mayor's cathedral bell ringing for early service. The whole city would be waking soon.
Adrian calculated they were below Gentry Square, not far from Artisan Row, where the city met the river. Determining their location was an easy guess, because it was the only section of town with covered sewers. A metal grate blocked their exit, and Hadrian was relieved to find hinges and a lock sealing it instead of bolts. Royce made quick work of the lock, and the rusted hinges surrendered to a few solid kicks from Hadrian. With the way clear, Royce went out to scout while Hadrian sat at the mouth of the sewer with Ulrich. The prince had worked his gag loose, and Hadrian could recognize his words now.
"I'll have you flailed to death! Release me this instant!"
"You'll be quiet," Hadrian replied, "or I'll let you go into the river, and we'll see how well you tread water with your hands and feet tied."
"You wouldn't dare! I'm the King of Melengar, you swine!"
Hadrian kicked Ulrich's legs out from under him, and the prince fell face down. After allowing him to struggle for a few moments, Hadrian pulled him up.
"Now keep your mouth shut, or I might leave you to drown next time."
Ulrich coughed and sputtered, but didn't speak another word. Royce returned, having slipped into the sewer soundlessly. "We're right on the river. I found a small boat by a fisherman's dock and took the liberty of commandeering it in His Majesty's name. It's just down the slope in a stand of reeds."
"No,"
the prince protested and shook his shoulders violently.
"You must release me. I'm the king."
Hadrian gripped him by the throat and into his ear whispered,
"What did I tell you about talking? Not a sound, or you swim."
"But..." Hadrian dunked the prince again, pulled him up for a short breath, and dunked him once more.
"Not another sound,"
Hadrian growled. Ulrich sputtered, and Hadrian, dragging the prince with him, followed Royce down the slope. The craft was little more than an oversized rowboat, bleached by the sun and filled with nets and small painted buoys. The heavy smell of fish from the boat helped mask the stench of sewage. A tarp, stretched to form a little tent used to store gear or to serve as a shelter, covered the bow. They stuffed the prince underneath, pinning him there with nets and buoys. Hadrian pushed off the bank with a long pole he found in the boat. Royce used the wooden rudder to steer the small craft, as the river did the work of propelling them downstream. Near the headwaters, the current of the Gaelwar was strong, and forward momentum was no problem. They found themselves working to keep the boat in the center of the river as they moved swiftly westward. Just as the sky was turning from a charcoal gray to dull steel, they passed under the shadow of the city of Medford. From the river, they could see the great tower of Essendon Castle, its falcon standard flying at half-mast for the dead king. The flag was a good sign, but how long would it be before they discovered the prince was missing and they removed it? The river marked the southern edge of the city, skirting along Artisan Row. Large two-story warehouses of grey brick lined the bank, and great wooden wheels jutted out into the river, catching the current to power the millstones and lumber yards. Because the shallow waters of the Gaelwar prevented the passage of deep-keeled ships, numerous docks serviced flat-bottomed barges that brought goods from the small seaport village of Roe. There were also piers built by the fishing industry, which led directly to fish markets, where pulleys raised large nets and dumped them out onto the cutting floor. In the early morning light, the gulls had already begun to circle the docks where fishermen had started to clear the lines on their skiffs. No one paid particular attention to the two men in a small boat drifting downriver. Nevertheless, they stayed low in the boat until the last signs of the city disappeared behind the rising banks of the river. The day's light grew strong, as did the pull of the current. Rocks appeared, and the river trench deepened. Neither Royce nor Hadrian was an expert boatman, but they did their best dodging the rocks and shallows. Royce remained at the tiller, while Hadrian, on his knees, used the long wooden pole to push the bow clear of obstacles.
A few times they glanced off unseen boulders, and the hull lurched abruptly with a deep, unpleasant thud. When it did, they could hear the prince whimper, but otherwise he remained quiet, and their trip was a smooth one. In time, the full face of the sun rose overhead, and the river widened considerably and settled into a gentle flow with sandy banks and rich green fields beyond. The Gaelwar divided two kingdoms. To the south lay Glaston, the northern marchland of the Kingdom of Warwick. To the north was Galilin, the largest province in Melengar, administered by Cant Pickering. At one time the river had been a hotly disputed division between two uneasy warlords, but those days were gone. Now it was a peaceful fence between good neighbours, and both banks remained lovely, untroubled pastoral scenes of the late season, filled with hay mounds and grazing cows. The day became unusually warm. Because it was so late in the year, there were few insects about. The cicadas' drone had disappeared, and even the frogs were quiet. The only sound that remained was that of the soft, gentle breeze through the dry grasses. Hadrian reclined across the boat with his head on the bundle of the steward son's old clothes and his feet on the gunwale. His cloak and boots were off, and his shirt was open. Similarly, Royce lay with his legs up, idly guiding the boat. The sweet scent of wild salafon was strong in the air, the fragrance more pungent after the plant surviving the year's first frost. Except for the lack of food, the day was turning out to be quite wonderful, and would have been even if they had not just escaped a horrible death hours before. Hadrian tilted his head back to catch the full light of the sun on his face.
"Maybe we should be fishermen."
"Fishermen?" Royce asked dubiously.
"This is pretty nice, isn't it? I never realized how much I liked the sound of water lapping against a boat before. I'm enjoying this. The buzzing of a dragonfly, the sight of the cattails, and the bank drifting lazily by."
"Fish don't just jump into the boat, you know," Royce pointed out. "You have to cast nets, haul them in, gut the fish, cut off their heads, and scale them. You don't just get to drift."
"Putting it that way makes it sound oddly more like work."
Hadrian scooped a handful of water from the river and splashed it on his warm face. He ran his wet fingers through his hair and sighed contentedly.
"You think he's still alive?" Royce asked, nodding his head toward Ulrich.
"Sure," Hadrian replied without bothering to look. "He's probably sleeping." "Why do you ask?"
"I was just pondering something. Do you think a person could smother in a wet potato bag?"
Hadrian lifted his head and looked over at the motionless prince.
"I really hadn't thought about it until now."
He got up and shook Ulrich, but the prince didn't stir.
"Why didn't you mention something earlier?"
he said, drawing his dagger. He cut through the ropes and pulled the bag clear. Ulrich lay still. Hadrian bent down to check if he was breathing. Just then, the prince kicked Hadrian hard, knocking him back toward Royce. Ulrich began feverishly untying his feet, but Hadrian was back on him before he cleared the first knot. He slammed Ulrich to the deck, pinning his hands over his head.
"Hand me the twine,"
Hadrian barked to Royce, who was watching the wrestling match with quiet amusement. Royce casually tossed him a small coil, and when Hadrian at last had the prince secured, he sat back down to rest.
"See," Royce said, "that's more like fishing. Only fish don't kick, of course."
"Okay, so it was a bad idea."
Hadrian rubbed his side where the prince had hit him.
"By brutalizing me, the two of you have sentenced yourselves to death. You know that, don't you?"
"That's a bit redundant, don't you think, Your Majesty?" Royce inquired. "Seeing as how you already sentenced us to death once today."
The prince rolled onto his side, tilting his head back, squinting against the brilliant sunlight.
"You!" he shouted, amazed. "But how did you... Arista!"
His eyes narrowed in anger.
"Not
jealous, is she? My dear sister is behind all this. She hired you to kill my father, and now she plans to eliminate me so she can rule.
The king was her father as well. Besides, if we wanted to kill you, don't you think you'd already be dead? Royce asked. Why would we go to all the trouble of hauling you down this river? We could have slit your throat, weighed you down with rocks, and dumped you hours ago. I might add that such a fate would be considerably better than what you had planned for us. The prince considered this for a moment.
So, it's ransom, then. Do you intend to sell me to the highest bidder? Did she promise you a profit from my sale? You're both fools if you believe that. Arista will never allow it. She'll see me dead. She has to in order to secure her seat on the throne. You won't get a copper.
Listen, you little royal pain in the ass. We didn't kill your father. In fact, for what it's worth, I thought old Amrath was a fair king, as far as they go. We also aren't ransoming or selling you.
Well, you certainly aren't trussing me up like a pig to get in my good graces. Now, exactly what are you doing with me?
The prince struggled against his bonds, but eventually settled down.
If you really want to know, we are trying to save your life. As strange as that may seem, Hadrian said.
You're what? Ulrich asked, stunned.
Your sister seems to think someone residing in the castle, the same lot that killed your father, is plotting to kill everyone in the royal family. Because you would be the next likely target, she freed us to smuggle you out for your own safety.
Ulrich pulled his legs up under him and worked his way to a sitting position, with his back resting up against a pile of white and red striped buoys. He stared at the two of them for a moment.
If Arista didn't hire you to kill my father, then exactly what were you doing in the castle tonight?
Hadrian provided a quick summary of his meeting with De Witt, to which the prince listened without interruption.
And then Arista came to you in the dungeon with this story, asking you to abduct me to keep me safe?
Trust me, Hadrian said. If there was another way to get you out of there, we would have left you.
So, you actually believe her?
You're dumber than I thought, Ulrich said, shaking his head.
Don't you see what she's doing? She's out to have the kingdom for herself.
If that were so, why would she have us kidnap you? Royce asked. Why not just have you killed like your father? Ulrich thought a moment, his eyes drifting to the floor of the boat, and then he nodded.
She most likely tried.
He looked back at them. I wasn't in my room last night. I slipped out for a rendezvous and fell asleep until I heard the noise. It's very likely an assassin was sent for me, but I wasn't there. After that, I had a guard with me at all times until Arista convinced me I had to come alone to the kitchen. I should have known she was betraying me. He swung his bound legs into the mound of nets.
I just never thought she could be so cold as to kill our father. But that's how she is, you see. She's extremely clever.
She told you this story about a traitor, and it was believable because it was true. She only lied about not knowing who it was. Once her assassin missed me, she used you. It was more likely that you'd agree to a kidnapping rather than murder, so she set you up. Royce didn't answer, but glanced at Hadrian.
There was this boat, the prince went on, looking around him. Perfect for your needs, waiting at the river's edge.
Ulrich dipped his head at the tarp next to him.
How nice to have a boat with a cover like this to hide me under. With a nice boat and a river, you wouldn't be tempted to stray off the water.
You can't go upstream from the city. The headwaters are too rough.
You have to go toward the sea. She knows exactly where we are and where we'll be. Did she say where to take me? Is it somewhere down this river?
Lake Windermere.
Ah, the Winds Abbey?
It's not far from Roe, and this river travels toward it.
How convenient.
Of course, we'll never make it, the prince told them. She'll have killers waiting along the bank. They will murder us. She'll say you two killed me, just as you killed my father. And, of course, her guards killed you when you tried to flee. She'll have a wonderful burial for me and my father. The next day, she will call Bishop Saldor and perform her coronation. Royce and Hadrian sat in silence.
Do you need more proof? The prince went on. You say this fellow that hired you was called DeWitt. You said he was from Calais. Arista returned from a visit there only 2 months ago. Perhaps she made some new friends. Perhaps she promised them land in Melengar in return for help with a troublesome father and brother who stood between her and the crown.
We need to get off this river, Royce told Hadrian.
You think he's right? Hadrian asked.
Doesn't matter at this point. Even if he's wrong, the owner of this boat will report it stolen. When news leaks out that the prince is missing, they will connect the two. Hadrian stood up and looked downstream.
If I were them, I would send a group of riders down the riverbank in case we stopped, and another set of riders running fast down Westfield Road to catch us at Wyson Ford. It would only take them 3 or 4 hours.
Which means they could already be there, Royce concluded.
We need to get off this river, Hadrian said.
The boat came into view of Wyson Ford, a flat, rocky area where the river widened abruptly and became shallow enough to cross. Farmer Wysand had built a small stock shelter of split rails close to the water, allowing his animals to graze and drink unattended. It was a very pretty spot. Thick hedges of elderberry bushes lined the bank, and a handful of yellowing willows bent so low toward the river that their branches touched the water and created ripples and whimsical whirlpools along the surface. The moment the boat entered the shallows, hidden archers launched a rain of arrows from the bank. One struck the gunwale with a thud. The second and third found their target in the royal falcon insignia emblazoned on the back of the prince's robe. The figure in the robe fell from view into the bottom of the boat. More arrows found their marks in the chest of the tillerman, who dropped into the water, and the poleman, who merely slumped to one side. From behind the screen of bushes and willows, 6 men emerged, dressed in browns, dirty greens, and autumn golds. They entered the river, waded out, and caught the still drifting boat.
"It's official. We're dead," Royce declared comically. Interestingly enough, the first arrows hit Ulric.
The three of them were lying concealed in the tall field grass atop the eastern hill, overlooking the river upstream of the ford. Less than 100 yards to their right lay the Westfield Road. From there, the road ran along the riverbank all the way to Roe, where the river joined the sea.
"Now do you believe me?" the prince asked.
"It only proves that someone is indeed trying to kill you, and that they are not us. They're not soldiers either, or at least they aren't in uniform, so they could be anyone," Royce told them.
"How can he see so much? The arrows, the clothing. I can only see movement and colour from this distance," Ulric said.
Hadrian shrugged. The prince was now dressed in the clothes of the steward's son, a loose-fitting grey tunic, worn and faded wool knee-length breeches, brown stockings, and a tattered, stained wool cloak which was too long. He wore on his feet a pair of shoes that were a little more than soft leather bags tied at his ankles. Although the prince was no longer bound, Hadrian kept hold of a rope tethered around his waist. Hadrian also carried the prince's sword for him.
"They're moving in on the boat," Royce announced.
All Hadrian could really see were shadowy movements under the trees until one of the men stepped out into the sunlight to grab the bow of the boat.
"It won't be long before they discover they've only killed 3 bushels of thickets wrapped in old clothes,"
Hadrian told Royce, so I'd be quick. Royce nodded and promptly trotted down the slope.
What's he doing?
Ulrich asked in shock.
He'll get himself killed, and us as well.
That's one opinion, Hadrian said.
Just sit tight.
Royce slipped into the shade of the trees, and Hadrian immediately lost sight of him.
Where'd he go?
The prince asked with a puzzled look on his face. Once more, Hadrian shrugged. Below them, the men converged on the boat, and Hadrian heard a distant shout. He couldn't make out the words, but he saw someone holding up the Ulrich bush, complete with arrows. Two of the men remained with the boat, while the others waded toward the bank. Just then, Hadrian caught sight of movement in the trees, a train of tethered horses trotting up the slope toward him and Ulrich. From the bank came shouts of alarm and cursing as the distant figures struggled to race across the field and up the hill. When the horses drew nearer, Hadrian spotted Royce crouched down, hanging between the two foremost animals. He caught two of the horses, pulled the bridle off one, and quickly tied a lead line to the other horse's halter. He ordered Ulrich to mount. Angry shouts erupted as the archers spotted them. Two or three stopped to fit arrows, but their uphill shots fell short. Before they could close the distance, the three mounted and galloped toward the road. Royce led them a mile northwest to where the Westfield and Stone Mill roads intersected. Here Hadrian, and by default Ulrich, rode west. Royce, leading the train of captured horses, stayed behind to cloud their tracks and then rode north. An hour later he caught up with them with only the horse he rode. They turned off the road into an open field and headed away from the river, but still moved generally westward. The horses had built up a solid sweat and were puffing for air. When the men reached the hedgerow lands, they slowed their pace. Eventually they reached the thickets, and there they stopped and dismounted. Ulrich found a spot clear of thorn bushes and sat down, fussing with his tunic, which didn't hang on him quite right. Royce and Hadrian took the opportunity to search the animals. There were no markings, symbols, parchments, or emblems of any kind to identify the attackers. Moreover, except for a spare crossbow and a handful of bolts left on Hadrian's mount, they wore only saddles.
"You'd think they would have some bread, at least. Who travels without water?"
Hadrian complained. They clearly didn't expect to be out long.
"Why do you still have me tethered?" the prince asked, irritated. "This is extremely humiliating." "I don't want you getting lost," Hadrian replied, with a grin. "There's no reason to drag me around any further. I accept that you did not kill my father. My cunning sister merely fooled you. It's quite understandable. She's very intelligent. She even fooled me. Now, if you don't mind, I would like to return to my castle so I can deal with her before she consolidates her power and has the whole army turned out to hunt me down. As for you two, you can go wherever Maribor dictates. I really don't care." "But your sister said..." Hadrian began. "My sister just tried to have us all killed back there, or weren't you paying attention? We have no proof it was her. If we let you return to Essendon, and she is right, you'll be walking to your death." "And what proof do we have it wasn't her? Do you still intend to escort me to wherever she told you to take me? Don't you think she'll have another trap waiting? I see my death far more probable on the road there than on any other road. Look, this is my life. I think it's fair for me to decide. Besides, what do you care if I live or die? I was about to have you two tortured to death. Remember?"
"You know," Royce paused a moment, "he's got a point there."
"We promised her," Hadrian reminded him, "and she saved our lives. Let's not forget that."
Ulrich threw his hands up and rolled his eyes.
"By Mar, you are thieves, aren't you? It's not as if you have a sense of honor to contend with. Besides, she was also the one who betrayed you and put your lives in danger in the first place. Let's not forget that."
Hadrian ignored the prince.
"We don't know she is responsible, and we did promise."
"Another good deed?" Royce asked. "You'll remember where the last one ended us."
Hadrian sighed. There it is.